Welcome to the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast. I'm Brady, and I'm here sharing my journey learning Bitcoin, hoping it makes yours a bit easier. How's it going out there, Bitcoiners? Hope you all are well all around the world. We're heading into the weekend again. I'm looking forward to a rare weekend without any hard commitments. I'm going to just hang with my family, work on a couple home projects. Really looking forward to that. I've got a good one for your weekend. Nick Newman joined me to talk about his work as product lead of, I think, the best product team in Bitcoin at Casa. As you all probably know, I'm a huge fan of Casa. I bought a node the day they were announced. I used their Gold Keymaster 2 of 3 seedless multisig solution to keep my keys safe. So shout out to Casa. Thank you for setting a high bar for Bitcoin companies to reach. I think it's great work you guys are doing. Keep it up. All right, let's dive into this one. Here we go. All right, I am really excited to welcome Nick Newman, product lead at Casa, to the show today. How's it going, Nick?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you're here. Nick and I have sort of the second degree personal connection. Our fathers have been friends for a long time and have worked together on and off over the years. And a while ago, it's like a few months ago at least, my dad told me that he had run into your dad and they were talking about the kids and discovered that we were both into Bitcoin. And it was just really awesome to find out that you were at Casa. It took me a minute talking to my dad. He's like, he's at some Bitcoin company. I can't remember the name of it. So I just started listing off, you know, Bitcoin companies. He's like, yeah, Casa, that's the one. That's the one. I'm like, no shit. Like, I love Casa. Yeah. I'm a customer and, you know,
yeah, and just I really think I saw kind of randomly after my dad mentioned that to me, that he had talked to your dad, that, you'd bought a Casa node. And I was like, oh, I gotta say something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and we like our brothers, like your family has like the same names in your family too. There's you yeah, and then exactly. There's a Brady, and then I have a brother Blake. You have a brother yep. Blake. So,
apparently they're popular names for our generation.
Apparently, yeah. Or maybe they talk to each other and we're inspired. You're like, yeah, oh, I like that name. Who knows? Yeah, so we have a bunch to talk about today. Like I said, I'm a big Casa fan, a happy customer. I like Instabot the node as soon as Jeremy posted about them on Twitter. So mine was in that initial batch of 100 nodes. It's been running since then. It's been doing great. I mean, one of the reasons I bought it right away is I just knew I love the product team at Casa, and just knew that being a part of that ecosystem and getting all of those software updates and that support over the years is going to be like invaluable. Like I wasn't like doing it for the piece of hardware. I was doing it for like just getting into the Casa system, you know? And yeah, that's definitely paid off for sure.
And that's something that we hope will continue to pay off for a long time.
Yeah. I think you guys have got an incredible business model and we'll definitely get into the details of that. But I used the node to receive the Lightning Torch earlier this year, and send it out. I used it via the Tor browser on my phone. Actually, I have the Tor browser on my phone and got to the node from the Bitcoin 2019 conference this summer and was able to use my personal node at home through the Tor browser, at the conference. And then of course it's much easier to do that now because we've got the Sats app.
Definitely.
And we'll definitely talk about Sats app. It's amazing. But before we get into that stuff, let's go ahead and dive into your background a bit, since your story is a little bit lesser known than some other Bitcoiners who have been doing the podcast rounds for a while now.
Sure.
How'd you get into product design and find your way to Casa?
Yeah, so I actually started out my career out of college in finance. I did investment banking and private equity stuff, and I realized after a couple of years of that it really just, I wasn't feeling fulfilled by it. And I wanted to, you know, rather than analyzing other companies or investing in them, et cetera, I wanted to actually build something myself. And so I found a job through a connection as a product manager at a travel tech startup. And I worked there for a couple of years. And about halfway through working there, I caught the crypto bug really in like the very end of 2016 and started reading as much as I could about it, spending probably way too much time during my normal job hours reading blog posts about Bitcoin and Ethereum. And so then I, from there, started writing a little bit, was diving into some white papers and writing some blog posts about, you know, trying to make them easier for the average person to understand. From there, in early 2018, I participated at the ETH Denver hackathon. It was the first ETH Denver conference, and I went in with an idea that I called KeySplit, which was using Shamir's secret sharing to split up a private key and make it so people could, you know, share the encrypted shards of it with their friends to keep safe with them, and then they could take any three of those five shards and put it back together to recreate their private key if they ever lost their key. Because I was looking at some of the problems of the space and thought that private key management was just a disaster waiting to happen, basically. You know, people can barely keep track of their passwords. So how do we expect them to keep track of a giant private key that they're writing down a 24-word phrase on a piece of paper, et cetera?
Right.
So we actually ended up, I found an awesome team. Before the conference, we all signed up as solo hackers, and then we met each other over Slack. And then at the conference, we built KeySplit and ended up winning, or being one of the winning teams at the hackathon.
Nice.
So that was really fun. Awesome. And from there, Jeremy, the CEO at Casa, reached out to me because they were already working on something very similar, but it was 3 of 5 multi-sig rather than 3 of 5 Shamir secret sharing. So I talked to him a bit, and then that was how I ended up joining Casa as the head of product, and really with Jeremy running our product from there. And so I joined before we'd even launched our 3 of 5 Keymaster. So I've really gotten to see a lot of this from the beginning, which has been super cool.
Yeah. When did the nodes launch? Was that late 2017 or early 2018, I guess?
No. So the nodes actually launched late 2018. So our first product was Keymaster, which was 3 of 5 multi-sig using hardware wallets.
Right.
And so we kind of looked at it like, what are the biggest problems in using Bitcoin? And they totally, the Casa team was already on the same boat as me of like, private key management sucks. So we built Keymaster, and then later that year, we were thinking about what other things in the Bitcoin ecosystem are harder than they should be to do right now. And one of those was running a node. And so that's how we ended up coming around with the idea for the Casa node. And so that launched in late 2018.
Yeah, Bitcoin time is just, it's like this time warp that you're in, and it seems way longer.
It goes fast.
Yeah, that was November of last year, I think, that I ordered the node, but it feels like so much longer ago.
Exactly. Yeah, you kind of, it's all a blur and you forget what year it is half the time.
It's true. It's time dilation as we get sucked into this black hole. So you were there at a pretty early time then. And like the first product I remember coming out, the 3 of 5 Keymaster, I remember thinking like, all right, it makes sense because you've got to sort of go after the higher end of the market first, to kind of like, cause you don't have to have as much reach or whatever marketing effort and stuff. You don't have to get as many customers, to kind of get revenue coming in. So I was really, really happy when the node came out, and I was in the back of my mind, I was like, hopefully there's something like, there's going to be a cheaper like multi-sig solution that they're going to come out with, and it'll have something to do with this node. And that's exactly what you guys ended up doing. So now that people who had bought the node originally before the 2 of 3 gold service was available have kind of been grandfathered in, so that we have a year of the gold service, and moving forward, it's going to be $300 a year for the gold service, 2 of 3 multi-sig. Can we talk a bit about how your multi-sig solutions work, just kind of from the technical side of things, like how they're actually protecting our private keys?
Yeah, sure. So the idea with multisig, just from the very most basic start, is that instead of only needing to approve sending a Bitcoin transaction from one device and having one signature, you are approving it from multiple devices before the transaction can be broadcast to the network.
So, right. So it's the same principle of as like two-factor authentication. So you're like using your password, and then you're putting in a number from a authenticator app or something.
Right. And so whereas maybe a lot of two-factor authentication is still on the same phone, they're just separate apps. We wanted to take it a step further with Keymaster and make it actually separate hardware devices. And so, for example, in the 3 of 5 solution, which we call the Key Shield, you have one signature on your phone, three signatures that are split between a different hardware wallet each, and then one signature that is a CASA held emergency key in case you lose some of your devices. So what that allows people to do is say, I'm going to have my phone to manage my transactions, see the app, all of that, but then I'm going to spread my hardware wallets into different locations so that I'm going to put maybe one Trezor somewhere like in a safe in my home, one Trezor or a ledger in my office, and then one in like a bank safety deposit box. Mm-hmm. And so then that protects people not only against somebody, a hacker who maybe like hacked into their one of their accounts or their phone or something and was able to get a private key. It also protects against people attacking you in person. So if this is especially important for higher net worth individuals who own more Bitcoin, they tend to find themselves targets of, or they're at least more at risk of being a target of somebody coming to their house and saying, send me your Bitcoin. And so with the Key Shield and Keymaster, you can actually say, that is impossible. I have to go to my office and to the bank in order to send this Bitcoin anywhere. And so that provides just a huge level of protection versus a single signature wallet that's just sitting on your phone.
Right. Because then the attacker would have to go into some crazy scenario like abduction or something. And then, like, you know, so it's a much more involved attack at that point than just showing up and threatening somebody and getting the Bitcoin right away.
Yeah. And before we made Keymaster, like this was possible, right? You could do multi-sig because it's part of the Bitcoin protocol. But what wasn't really there was the usability of it. You had to really fight through some command line stuff or through maybe using some apps that are out there, but we think we've done a better job of designing ours, et cetera, to make it super easy to use. And so we think that CASA was really the first super easy to use multisig that makes it just like using any other app. And we've had some of our clients come to us and after they've been, you know, gone through the onboarding process and gotten their multisig all set up, they're like, before I kind of felt like I almost needed a treasure map to know where all my private keys were and how I was going to put them all together for my multisig or whatever. And now I just feel so much more comfortable with my setup and I can finally sleep at night kind of thing. So that's been super rewarding.
User experience is just, you know, a whole other ballgame that you guys have just put it to a whole nother level. I think before you had to use like Electrum was one of the apps that you could use to create some multi-sig situations. But yeah, it's the UI UX experience of Electrum versus the Keymaster app is night and day.
Well, and the thing, Electrum's a great app. Like you can do maybe some more kind of niche things with Electrum, but that's part of building a great user experience is knowing where to simplify things so that people can just pick up the app and use it from the start rather than having to go through hours of configuration kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that I really appreciate about it is, you know, in case something happens to me, it's a lot easier for my wife who doesn't really know much about the technical side of Bitcoin, really. to get access to the Bitcoin, then, I mean, the process, like the experience, like you said, is much more just like any app on your phone. And so it'll be much easier for her to understand. I've showed her the process and yeah, she feels comfortable with it, you know, which is a big deal.
Yeah. And the nice thing about that too, that we really try to provide is the knowledge that if something were to happen to you, your wife can come to CASA and talk to our customer support or our client services, and we will help her figure this out. It's like a big part of what CASA offers is the service side of things. Like, we're going to be there when you have questions. And I think that's something that we have done to really try and set ourselves apart from some of the other solutions out there.
Yeah. So what's it like when I want to send a transaction from one of my multi-sig accounts or my Keymaster account?
Sure. So what you'll do is you go in and in the app, you do all of the things that you would expect around sending a Bitcoin transaction. So you would say how much you want to send, where you want to send it, and then you're going to press start transaction. And this will immediately sign the transaction from your phone since you have one key on your phone. And then it's going to say, okay, now you need to sign with, in the case of the basic multi-sig for gold members, which is 2 of 3, you need to sign with one other device. And in the case of the key shield, which is 3 of 5 multi-sig, you need to sign with 2 other devices. So what happens next is you tap, all right, I'm going to sign with my first hardware wallet. And you get an email that has a link, and you basically plug in the hardware wallet, the Trezor or the Ledger, to your computer. And it's a super easy process of just following the instructions online, clicking next, clicking yes, I want to sign this transaction, and then you confirm it on the hardware wallet itself, and then it's done. So once you'll do that with the next wallets until you have met the required number of signatures for whatever setup you have, and then you just hit send transaction, and it basically compiles all the signatures for you in the background and then broadcasts it to the network.
Very cool. And is that using the CASA node to broadcast out to the chain, or is it going from like a CASA a node run by the company?
Yeah, so it doesn't use the node right now, but that's definitely something that we're working on.
Right on. Yeah. I know that like with Ledger, for instance, you use the Ledger Live app, and transactions that you broadcast will go through Ledger's node basically. So there's some privacy concerns there, and yeah, it would definitely be cool to be able to leverage your personal node. And I know that that's like a major part of the CASA brand is self-sovereignty. So
yeah,
sense that you guys would be working.
It's something that we're working on, and it's just, especially with multi-sig, it adds some extra layers of complexity there. So we're just taking our time to make sure that we do it in a really secure manner that keeps people's funds safe, because the number one thing that we have to come back to is, are our customers' funds safe? And because that's really what people are paying us for in the very end. So we're taking our time to make sure that we get that right.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense. A question that came from Twitter that's kind of related to the node, be good to ask now, I think, is people are wondering about getting into Lightning routing. And so in my view, the CASA node is more of like a personal device for your personal self-sovereignty, so kind of your own personal transactions, et cetera, not necessarily a device that is, you know, like suited to the use case of routing, although you could do it. Has there been any talk, or like, have you guys heard requests like this from users that they want to like start dabbling in routing on the network?
Yeah, so we hear this from some of our users, and generally what we say is the first thing you should do is check out some of Alex Bosworth's posts. He's one of the engineers at Lightning Labs, and he's written some really in-depth posts about how to best optimize your node for routing. But it's something that I think we are trying to make better and make easier for people. But you're right that like our first view of the node is that this is a personal node that allows you to access the Lightning Network and send transactions over Lightning as in the easiest way possible. So that's been our focus up till now.
Yeah, that makes sense. Someone also asked, Brian on Twitter asked if there's any way to limit bandwidth suck while allowing incoming connections. Like maybe be able to limit the number of incoming connections, I guess, would be one way.
Yeah, so we actually already have this set up in the node to make sure that one, they aren't, you know, taking up a ton of people's bandwidth, but also each incoming connection that you have adds extra strain on the actual hardware. And so with a more low powered, kind of energy efficient device like a Raspberry Pi, you don't want to just allow as many connections as possible coming in. So we already do limit the incoming connections. I think the max is maybe like 20, which is still like if you are getting 5, 10, 20 incoming connections on the Bitcoin node, you're still helping the network out immensely. And we found that that's a pretty good trade-off there between like not having too much bandwidth taken up, but also still supporting the network.
Yep, that makes sense. So let's dive into SatsApp. This just launched recently, and there were some Casa customers that were able to get early access and help sort of beta test. And I've had it, and there was a night on Twitter that a bunch of us were passing sats around on the Sats app, and it went great. You know, there were a couple of errors, like server errors, but restarting the app would get it to work. And you know, that's just early release kind of jitters to be expected. But yeah, the experience is great. You can get a Sats tag, kind of like a cash tag on Cash App, and really easily send Sats around to people who are on the service without having to deal with invoices or payment codes or anything like that. But you can also scan QR codes or paste in a payment request. And then the Sats app will send directly from your Casa node. And it's connected through Tor. And like I said earlier in the opening, I was using the Tor browser on my phone to connect through Tor from San Francisco to my node here in Lawrence, Kansas, and it worked great. But now with the Sats app, it's doing the same thing for me, but I don't have to go through a slow Tor browser and kind of do all that stuff. It looks beautiful. So now it's available, I guess, toward everybody. Did I see that earlier this morning? Like just today, you guys
released it? We released it on the App Store and the Play Store, so anybody can go and download it and use it. And you can use it even if you don't have a Casa node. We have on-chain Bitcoin in there as well.
Cool. So how does that work? Is it using like filters? It's not a full node in there in the app.
No, it's not a full node. So basically there's two parts to the app. There's the part that connects to your Casa node, which lets you send transactions over Lightning. And that was the first part that we built. And that was the part that you just kind of talked about, that it makes it easy to send Lightning transactions. You can use Sats tags to skip the whole invoicing process. And then the other part of the app is the Bitcoin key. So what we wanted to do was really make Sats app an entryway to Bitcoin for people. So when somebody asks, if a friend asks you, they've never used Bitcoin before and they want to know how to try using Bitcoin, we want people to be sharing Sats app with them and saying, this is the easiest way to get started. And so what we did was we put a full Bitcoin private key inside Sats app. It's saved in the phone's secure element. And that allows you to send on-chain Bitcoin in the same way using Sats tags or using addresses if you want. And so now even without a Casa node, you can use the Sats app. And so that's been pretty exciting to get that in there in the last couple of weeks. And then to launch it today, we're excited to bring on as many people as want to use it.
Yeah, that's very exciting. It could be a good entry point into the ecosystem, and then, you know, just kind of ramp people up slowly to becoming, you know, self-sovereign Bitcoiners over time.
Yeah, we really, and especially we think that the Sats tag helps with this a lot, because in my mind, a big barrier for people are Bitcoin addresses or Lightning invoices. And so, yeah, you know, when you send somebody a Bitcoin address, and they've never used Bitcoin before, they're confused, they're maybe worried they're typing in the wrong thing. And so we tried to smooth that out with Sats tags by letting people have a human readable username, but importantly, they're still holding their own keys, or they're still running through their own node when they're using Lightning. And that's, we think that's critical, is that we're making Bitcoin easier to use, but not just easy, we're making it easy to use correctly.
Yep.
Because there's plenty of custodial Bitcoin or Lightning wallets that are super easy to use, but you're not managing your own keys. You don't really have control or really own your own Bitcoin. So that's something that we think is really important and exciting about what we've done with Sats App.
Yeah, because at that point, you're not really using Bitcoin. You're just kind of giving up all of the benefits that Bitcoin brings you, and might as well just use, you know, Venmo or PayPal or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Sats App also has Sats Back, and you can go in once a day and kind of send this heartbeat. So it's just a little message, a communication from my personal Casa node to your guys' servers, just to kind of check in and be like, hey, yeah, my node's up and running. And then to incentivize that, you give away 10,000 sats a week if you check in at least five times that week, which is really cool. I think it's a great idea just to kind of get people used to opening the app every day. So I think that's a really good move for sure. Are you guys thinking about doing more with the Sats Back thing, like doing something like Lolly does, or partnering with someone like Lolly to kind of, I don't know, incentivize use of the app even more?
Yeah. So around just Sats Back in general, we are working on some other ways to earn Sats Back, and we're not really sharing too much on that yet, but we basically think that we were thinking about how do we get more adoption of Bitcoin, and how do we make that next step into people who haven't used Bitcoin are now interested in checking it out. And, you know, in the past, the industry as a whole has relied on bull runs for this. The bull runs get people some FOMO, and then it starts showing up in the news and people buy into Bitcoin and then they learn more. Well, we were thinking that providing a way for people to earn Bitcoin easily and get rewarded with Bitcoin is another way to bring new people into the ecosystem, because they see, oh, just by taking a few actions in an app like Sats App, I can be earning money. I can earn Bitcoin. So that was really one of the bigger ideas around Sats Back. And then we've added the specific ways that we've added so far are, if you connect a node to Sats App, we'll give you 20,000 Sats Back. And then if you send your 5 weekly heartbeats, we'll give you 10,000. So people have been super excited about the heartbeats, and we've been working on it for a while, and we're really excited to release it back when we did that. But it's an interesting way, like you said, to like just get people thinking about, is my node running, making sure that it's online, supporting the network, and then getting rewarded for doing that.
Yeah. So are you guys seeing lots of incoming heartbeat messages from people's Casa nodes?
Yeah, we've been blown away by the amount of heartbeats that people are sending. It's funny because we're getting way more heartbeats than we are a number of users in the app. So we know people are sending this multiple times a day. It's not just like something they're going in and doing once because they want to earn the money. They're going in multiple times a day and like using it to check if their node is online, or maybe they're showing friends. So that's something that we've seen that really, I think, shows people are excited about it. And so that makes us excited.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's interesting. Like, it's just a really simple mechanic and a really pretty simple idea. But it makes me feel this sort of like connection with my node, or like, you know, just makes it increases my awareness of my node, like what it's doing. And I also just kind of feel this like connection to it now, which is hard. It's kind of hard to explain. You kind of get that kind of same feeling with your phone or some devices or whatever. You just sort of feel this personal connection. But bringing that to your Bitcoin node through this simple mechanic is like kind of genius, really. I think it's pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah, we all like it, and it's interesting. Like when we settled on the name Heartbeat, it really, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there as far as feeling a connection to the node, because we were like, we want people to feel like this is a living thing in their house that is supporting the Bitcoin network, and giving that connection by the imagery of a heartbeat is exactly what we were going for.
Yeah, it works great. And it gives me this sort of sense of like my node is part of this global network of like this new money, this new financial system that's being kind of built before our eyes. And just thinking about this little box that's sitting, you know, in my house, and constantly receiving data and connecting to peers all over the world and being part of this you know network, this very much alive thing. And it gets compared to a living organism by a lot of Bitcoiners who kind of think about this stuff, like Brandon Quidham comes to mind. Dan Held has a series about kind of comparing Bitcoin to a tree or a plant, a living organism. So it's just kind of cool to be a part of that. And I think the heartbeat thing just really drives that home. And I think will be a valuable, just, I think it'll be really valuable to, helping people sort of connect to Bitcoin and grok what's happening here.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Definitely.
Yeah. And I thought it was kind of gimmicky, I guess. So my first impression was like, oh, what is this? This heartbeat thing on there giving you sats back. But honestly, after just like 2 weeks of doing it, like I'm like, no, this is not gimmicky. This is actually important and like matters. So, anyway.
Yeah. And we've started seeing some of our customers that have been saying that they've been sending us emails or talking on Telegram or Twitter and saying, this is now part of my morning routine. I wake up and there's one guy that I wake up and
it is.
Me and my son send the node heartbeat in the morning every day. And just seeing
oh, that's like awesome. That's awesome. That's cool. I should do that with my kids. They would love that. That's very cool. It's very cool. I had a couple of people ask me on Twitter to request me to ask you if Casa has any sort of, I guess, plans, maybe this is a longer term thing, to work on a noob friendly miner. So Colin Harper at Bitcoin Magazine says that Casa's mission is to bring Bitcoin to the homes of everyday folk and make running your own Bitcoin hardware and software easier. And you've done it with full nodes and with Lightning. Do you have any plans for a noob friendly miner?
So we don't right now. We're pretty focused on what our current product, suite, especially since we just released Sats App. We've got plenty to do. And so no, not right now.
Right on. That makes sense. And like, I mean, when I saw that question, my initial reaction was like, mining is kind of industrialized at this point. And, you know, I did an episode with Steve Barber of Upstream Data, a couple months ago. And yeah, he really drove home the point that like, this is not a thing that you just kind of do at home anymore, right? Like it used to be. It's a serious business and the margins are razor thin and you've got to really know what you're doing to be successful. So,
yeah. And that's why, I mean, it used to be that you could get Bitcoin by mining and it was, you could get a lot because not very many people were mining, but also Bitcoin was worth next to nothing. But now that's just not possible. And so the only way for a new person to get into Bitcoin is to buy it on an exchange. So that was, that feeds right into sats back because mm-hmm. now people have a new way to get Bitcoin and that's by earning it. And so I think, I mean, it's not just Casa that's doing Bitcoin rewards. And it's something that I think the industry in general is realizing, that people need other ways to get Bitcoin. And so this trend in rewards, I think, will be really good for adoption as a whole.
I also had several questions about cold card support. And cold card, of course, is a increasingly popular hardware wallet made by CoinKite and Rodolfo Novak on Twitter. So yeah, right now Keymaster only supports Trezor or Ledger. Do you guys have plans to support cold card?
Yes, we are working on that now. And basically the way we view our hardware wallet support is that we want to support as many hardware wallets as possible that are properly vetted for their security. And so, because from our perspective, if we only used a single hardware wallet, it would be vulnerable to like a supply chain attack. Like if there is some huge vulnerability with the single hardware wallet that we were using, then all of our clients' funds could be vulnerable. And so the more that we can give people options to use multiple types of hardware wallets in their multi-sig setup, the more secure our clients are.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's something that's really important, I think, to understand, is that multi-sig is a lot more secure than a single device, right? Like,
right.
Far more than just twice as secure. It's kind of exponentially more secure. And these hardware wallets like Ledger and Trezor are sort of infamous for like going back and forth and like trying to hack each other's product, you know, and then like bragging about it at some conference.
Right.
And so there are vulnerabilities. There are ways to hack these things. And it's not necessarily easy. Usually involves having actual physical, you know, access to the device.
And sometimes separate and hardware.
Certainly, right. And sometimes, yeah, some specialized hardware. So it's not like they're like insecure. It's definitely better to use a hardware wallet and have your private keys offline than to have them obviously custodied by an exchange or something, or just on your laptop where it's hot and connected to the internet. But you add in like two of those devices and all of a sudden it's, you know, exponentially harder for an attacker to exploit both of those, you know, whatever the vulnerabilities might be for each individual hardware wallet, to execute both of those vulnerabilities at the same time to sign a transaction.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and then you add two hardware wallets and you make them each a different type of hardware wallet, and you get even more security out of it. And so, I mean, that's something that like we think is pretty critical. And even if you consider, or if you, suspected that one of your hardware wallets may be compromised, we make it super easy in the Keymaster app to swap that out. And so you literally just mark the device as compromised in the app, and then you can replace it with a new device within a few minutes. It's just as easy as like when you set it up the first time. And then from there, you just keep on going, sending transactions as usual. And so that's something that we've definitely thought about and prepared for in the way that we've built out our multi-sig security setup. And kind of one thing that it leads to, which is probably my favorite part of multi-sig, is that you don't need to keep the seed phrases for each of the devices or each of the private keys. So like in our, for example, in our 3 of 5 key shield, if you, let's say you lose one of the hardware wallets in there, in the past, you would, in order to reinitialize that hardware wallet, you would get out your piece of paper with the 24 words on it, and you'd get a new hardware wallet, and you would reinitialize it with that same exact seed phrase. But with multisig, you just swap it out, and then you use the other devices in that key set to send the funds to the new wallet, or to the new key set that is whole and has the new device in it. So that's something that, for me personally, I hate saving seed phrases places. And so being able to completely do away with them is awesome.
Yeah, that's incredible. And that's, I think, maybe the one of the stickiest points for someone who's setting up, you know, their own Bitcoin address and then setting up, trying to hold their own private keys, is what do you do with that seed phrase? Because if that gets, if that's found, then you're done, you know? And so you might store it in like a safety deposit box, I guess is sort of one of the better ways that I can think of to try to protect it. But even at that point, your funds are literally being held by a bank, with a trusted third party. And it's not quite the same way as like using fiat or whatever, but it's just I find it ironic that, you know, you would go to trust a bank security deposit box for your Bitcoin, safety of your Bitcoin.
Yeah. Or some people put it in maybe a safety deposit box that they keep, or like a safe in their house. But
yeah,
then you hear the horror stories of, oh, it flooded and my safe that was supposed to be waterproof wasn't actually waterproof, and my seed phrase got totally demolished, kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah, it's a single point of failure. I mean, you could split up your key like you were talking about earlier with like Shamir's or something, or literally like have it physically, you know, cut into pieces and put it different bank vaults and stuff like that. But you know, that just, it's just a big pain in the ass, is what it comes down to. So
it's like, how do we make it easier than that? Well, get rid of the seed phrase completely and make it unnecessary.
Yeah, exactly. So let's say on like the 2 of 3 multi-sig, why did you guys choose to use, and I think you do this on the Keymaster as well, why did you guys choose to use the phone as one of the keys instead of like 2 hardware wallets plus the Casa key?
Yeah, so we initially chose that just because it's intended, especially on the 2 of 3, it's intended to be for first time multi-sig users with a really simple user experience. And so having a key on the phone allows people to, they understand it immediately. You know, they know, hey, I can send or I can sign this transaction from my phone and that counts as one of them. And you know, it's simple. They can grasp it. But we are working on making it so Gold members can choose basically whether to use their phone as a key or another hardware wallet. So the people that are more concerned with security will be able to use a second hardware wallet there. And the people that are newer and just want the simple experience can use the phone.
Love it, man. That's good to hear. And I'll definitely take advantage of that once it becomes available.
Definitely.
Let's see. What else do we have here from Twitter? All right. So here's a good question from Nate on Twitter. If Casa goes out of business, what happens to customers' funds that are in Casa Keymaster or other products like Satsap and the node?
Sure. So with Satsap and the node, let's hit the node first. The node, you completely own and run all the software. So if Casa goes out of business, nothing happens with the node. You still got all your funds.
And Casa doesn't even have access to like push software to the node. That's always like manually approved by the node owner to get updates, etc.
Yeah,
you have the heartbeat, right?
Yeah, exactly. We make the updates for the node are fully in control of the end user, and so they, in order to get the update, they have to agree to it. They got to pull it down, install, and then it automatically installs, etc. in the background. But it's triggered by user action.
Right.
So then on the regarding
the node, Casa going away would not affect anything on your node at all.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe we wouldn't be building sweet new features for it anymore. But as far as your funds being safe, they're safe.
Right.
So let's hit Keymaster next. So with Keymaster, we've built in what we call sovereign recovery. And so what this lets you do is you can get the, so on the mobile key that's on the phone, you can export your seed phrase for it. And that's all local to your phone. So you've got access to that. And then we have information for the other keys in your wallet that give you the derivation path and XPub and that kind of stuff. And so what that lets you do is take that and put it into something like Electrum so that you could boot up your multi-sig key set there and be able to send the funds out of it to wherever you want to. And so that's something that, you know, we don't ever plan to go out of business, and we especially don't plan to go out of business in 24 hours where everything explodes and like you have zero warning and everything like that. This is literally the last ditch thing that you should need to do if costs were to go out of business.
Extremely unlikely.
But as Bitcoiners, we got to prepare for that, right? So that's why we built out this system. And you know, if the worst were to come to pass, our users still own their own keys and they're safe.
Yep. And then Sats app, similar answer to the Casa node, because you have your own Bitcoin key in the Sats app, or you're connected to your node.
Right. So you're connected to your node for the Lightning side of things, and then for the Bitcoin side of things, the key is stored locally on your phone, and it's actually the same key as the mobile single signature key in Keymaster. And so for that, you can use Keymaster to export the private key, and then you'll have access to it.
Okay, right on. So there's a new feature on the Lightning Network protocol, and I think the three implementations that are out there have started supporting watchtowers at this point. And watchtowers, well, one, can you just like give us a quick overview of what a watchtower is, and then talk about Casa's plans to support watchtowers and how Casa users can be able to be able to take advantage of them?
Yeah. So what a watchtower is it is a node that essentially protects other nodes. So with the Lightning Network, your node has to be online 24/7, because if it goes offline, the other nodes that you have channels open to can technically steal your funds if they end up having broadcasting a transaction to the network that closes the channel where they have an incorrect or where they are like, they get your balance basically. And if your node is online, it's able to dispute that transaction broadcast to the network. But if it's offline, then it would miss it. So what a watchtower does is it lets your node connect to it and say, hey, here's the state of my channels. Can you please keep an eye on my node? And if it goes offline and one of the other nodes that I'm connected to is broadcasting a fake balance and trying to steal my funds, can you stop that? And so then if that happens, the watchtower node immediately disputes that transaction on chain and does what's called a justice transaction, I believe. And that punishes the other node and actually gives your node those funds. I'm pretty sure that's how it works. So that's a general explanation of what a watchtower does. And then as far as what Casa is planning on doing with them, we haven't announced anything yet. But we are looking at it, and we think it's a pretty interesting and useful service that maybe Casa could provide, or that even our users could use their node to provide. And so we're evaluating some of that and figuring out the best way to interact with watchtowers.
Very cool. That makes sense. I've had a couple of like power outages situations with my node over the past year or so, some big storms here and knocking power out. After the first time that happened, I was like, I should have done this a long time ago or right away, but I got a backup power supply basically, so it'll run battery for quite a while.
Yeah, we definitely
it'll give me a chance to like shut the, it'll give me a chance to shut the node down. And like if I'm away from home, I could even ostensibly like find somebody, like, you know, whoever's watching my house at the time, like kind of have them go and take care of it for me if possible. But so I kind of got that situation set up now, but you know, those things happen, and you know, you lose your internet connection for X amount of time, then you're going to need something, you know, a backup situation or solution. So the Watchtower release, I think, is going to be really important for the like operational safety of the network for sure.
Yeah. And there's also some other stuff that is being worked on, which will make it much harder for people to try and steal funds from each other. For example, there's something that Blockstream, I think, has been working on called L2. And that makes it, I think, cryptographically impossible to broadcast something that is not actually the current state of the channel. So that's something that's definitely a ways away. But we did just write a Crypto 101 blog post about that on our blog. So if anybody's interested in reading about that, they can go check that out. But yeah, watchtowers are the short-term solution to nodes going offline. And then I think there will be some longer-term solutions as well that'll help even if you aren't connected to a watchtower.
Right. It's cool to see all of these like potential issues and criticisms that have been levied against the Lightning Network kind of slowly get solved one by one. And that's what happens. I mean, this, we have the best developers in the world working on the base layer and on Lightning Network. And, you know, it's a system that has been designed in a certain way that can just, it can be continued. The kind of the base of it is in place and it fundamentally works from first principles. And we're just kind of patching up, you know, little loose ends as we go along, and it's just getting faster and safer and more private as time goes by.
Yeah. And I think what people have to realize is that the Lightning Network is still technically in beta. So the fact that it can do everything that it can now is amazing. And if you follow along with like Alex Bosworth's L&D evolution email that he sends every week, it's always amazing seeing the amount of development work that's going into making Lightning better constantly. So it's exciting to follow that. And I have full confidence that by the time, you know, by this time next year, Lightning will be leaps and bounds ahead of where it is today in terms of addressing some of the criticisms that have been put against it.
Yeah. And coding on the Lightning Network is so much more accessible than coding on the base layer. Although Miniscript was recently released this month, and that definitely helps make the arcane art of Bitcoin opcode programming much more accessible there. But yeah, it's a completely different thing on the Lightning Network, and it's going to be really open up that kind of application layer to a larger, much larger class of devs out there. And so it'll be, once it's, you know, stable and working, it's going to be really interesting to see a bunch of use cases that we can't even imagine yet popping up.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's some cool initiatives that the community is working on, like WebLN, which makes it really easy for front-end apps and websites to connect into the Lightning Network and utilize the Lightning Network. So we're only going to keep seeing more developer tooling come out that's going to make it really easy for people to onboard and start coding.
Yeah. So can we talk a bit about privacy? What's Casa's approach to privacy? Like, is it part of the kind of a core value of the company? And maybe if you want to talk about sort of your personal take on the importance of privacy for Bitcoin and just for individuals in general.
Yeah, sure. So privacy is one of our most important core values. I mean, we do an absurd amount of things that most people don't even see in order to protect our customers' privacy. And so like we've, one of our core principles is can't be evil. And we, Blockstack has this as well. And we kind of co-opted it, but we really like the idea that we should be aiming not just to don't be evil and don't do bad things with our customer data or whatever, but make it so we can't.
Yeah, which is kind of famously, just to tag the reference, that was Google's sort of mission statement back in the day.
Right, exactly.
Don't be evil. Yeah.
And so with can't be evil, we think it's genius, because it's the premise is don't collect the information on your customers in the first place, so that you can protect their privacy in any situation, to where, like, you know, you're not, if somebody hacks into your server, they're not getting a ton of customer information because you don't even have it. And so, you know, there's some things that you just have to collect from people, but like, they're like, if somebody signs up for a subscription with a credit card, you know, we need their credit card info. But
yeah,
what we like to say,
shipping addresses.
Yeah, exactly. And what we like to say is, don't collect what you can't protect. And so we actually, for some of the stuff like shipping addresses, we go back, and after we know that we don't need that stuff anymore, we purge it so that we don't even have it anymore.
Nice. So,
I mean, privacy is definitely important to us, and we've really tried to weave it into our company's culture as much as possible, so that when we're building products, it's always top of mind.
That's great. Why is it so important, do you think, to maintain customers' privacy?
So I think a lot of people... Oh, go ahead. If you have a little more there.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, kind of, and to provide customers with tools to protect their own privacy, right?
Yeah. So what a lot of people think is that, oh, I'm not some terrorist or something. I've got nothing to hide, so why is everybody so worried about privacy? But
yeah,
privacy is all about having the option to secure your own data. And, you know, it's about actually being able to choose that I want to keep these things private, or I want to share it. Whereas a lot of the stuff in a lot of the products in Web 2.0, there was no option. It was like, give all of your data to this product provider because they require it. And so privacy, I think, it is important, especially as we've seen with the all the hacks lately that have come out for the last 5 years, where tons of customer data is leaked. And, you know, maybe you don't think that it's that big of a deal that you're providing this personal information to a company who's providing you with a product in return. But when it gets hacked, and then the hacker uses that to gain access to a bunch of your accounts or to figure out where you live, then it becomes suddenly much more real and much more personal. And it's the kind of thing that people don't think about because you don't like to think about it. It's kind of scary, and you'd rather just keep living your life and not worry about privacy because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to think about it. But it's something that we think is important for people to start thinking about because of what has happened over the last 5 years or so. And so we try to build that into our tools in a way that, from the customer's perspective, it's not onerous for them to protect their own privacy. It's the default. And it's hopefully just as easy to use as something where you would maybe be giving up all of your data, et cetera. And so we've really tried to just build that into our products in a easy way that makes it so that people are just, they're protecting their own privacy by default.
That's the way you got to do it. Yeah. And I mean, what we've learned is that people will choose convenience over privacy.
Yep.
Basically every time. Yep. And there is an increasing awareness of the importance of privacy, especially since we've gone so far down this path of a loss of privacy. But yeah, it's still at this point, you know, even though there's been data breach after data breach after data breach, and there's been plenty of consequences that people have suffered for loss of privacy, just all kinds of hassles and identity theft and all that. You know, I think most people have probably seen it at least like second or third hand, heard stories. You know, my mother had her identity stolen, and it's been years of a headache for her.
Yeah.
So yeah, people are starting to wake up to it. And one thing I love about Bitcoin is that it really incentivizes the sort of gathering of the personal knowledge and responsibility that you need to have to sort of take control of your own privacy, and also just the development of the infrastructure, the internet and digital infrastructure that we need in order to, you know, have a private web, a private version of the web. And that's all getting built out and being incentivized by, you know, Bitcoin's price appreciation itself, and that technology is getting, is being paid for basically as Bitcoin monetizes, as more developers come in and build this stuff out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And, I think
companies
it's
like Casa can run and make privacy a default.
Yeah, exactly. And it's on the companies that are working in the Bitcoin space. It's their responsibility to make sure that they're building products that stay true to Bitcoin's ethos of, you know, self-sovereignty and privacy.
Yeah. So Casa's CTO, Jameson Lopp, who I'm sure all of my listeners know very well, he's a Bitcoin badass.
Oh, yeah.
He posted to Twitter a few days ago that there's a security vulnerability in all three of the major Lightning Network protocol implementations that could lead to a loss of funds. The latest version of all three implementations already have it patched, and Casa nodes, if you've updated within the past month or so, the latest patch have been fixed basically. And the vulnerability will be disclosed in a little while. Like, we don't know exactly what it is. I really just wanted to bring it up for awareness sake. So if you're a Casa customer out there and you've missed this announcement, you know, just to kind of be aware of it. But is there anything else you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, so we're going to send out a notice to everybody who's purchased a Casa node, just saying, hey, make sure you've updated. But example, Casa nodes use LND as their Lightning software, and it was patched as of LND v0.7, which we put out in an update to Casa nodes a month ago, before this was even known that it was out, that this vulnerability existed. So as long as you've updated your Casa node in the last month, you are safe. And if you haven't, definitely go and just run the latest update so that you can make sure that your funds are secure. But this is something that isn't a vulnerability that's specific to Casa nodes. It's any Lightning Network implementation. And so, you know, even if you don't own a Casa node and you're running your own Lightning node on your PC or something, just make sure that you go and check out what the latest version you should be on is, and make sure you're updated to that version.
Okay. So we'll find out more about the details of that protocol vulnerability in a few weeks. All right, cool. I'd like to finish up by talking a bit about your product process. I'm interested in product development. You know, I've been building products for the web, websites and apps and stuff for, 20 years now. So can you talk a bit about your product process that you guys have sort of established at Casa, and maybe something that's unique about it or that works particularly well for you all?
Yeah, sure. So we really try and start with first principles of things, which is something that, you know, it's not just us. A lot of great product companies do that. But what that means is that you start with a problem and you say, all right, this is a problem that a large number of people are experiencing. How do we fix it? And so then the next step is thinking about what the solutions to that problem are. And so sometimes those solutions will come from within Casa, from our design team or from our engineering team. Other times it'll come from our customers. Like, that's why we try and keep in great contact with our customers and always be talking with them, because sometimes they'll see a problem and think of a solution themselves. And then it's like, they'll pass it to us and it's a free idea. And that's just because they want to see it happen. And so they're like, hey, Casa, you should do this. So after we really think out at a high level what needs to happen, we'll usually talk with the design team and the engineering team and figure out the best way to make this solution happen. And so then once we know kind of what's possible in general, but especially on the engineering side, our design team, who are awesome at what they do, will work on what does this look like? How should it feel in the software or in the hardware? And how do we make this as easy as possible and as simple as possible for people to understand while still giving them enough information that they are knowledgeable about what's going on. Because we think that that education side of things is really important for our users. So then we'll go through a few iterations on the design side. And once we really feel confident in our design, then our engineering team takes over and they'll work on building it. Our engineering team is also just as awesome as our design team. And they build it usually way faster than anybody is expecting. And along the way, what's great about our engineers.
Wow, that's amazing.
I know, it really is. It's like most of the time it takes way longer than you would expect, but our engineers are awesome. What is also great about our team is that a lot of our engineers have a really good product mindset. And so they'll be building something and they'll be like, hey, I think this would actually work better if we did it this way or if we changed this thing. And so then we get this tight iteration process going between engineering and product and design to where we can quickly test and make decisions on things and change as needed as we're developing to end up coming out with the best experience possible in the end. And so then we've got our finished or near finished product and we do a lot of QA testing on it because we have to make sure that our customers' funds are safe and that our customers feel confident that their funds are safe. And then we'll start rolling it out and talking to people about it and getting feedback from customers. And then that feeds all the way back in to the cycle to keep improving.
Sure. What kind of tools do you guys use to organize your product process?
So we use a few different things. I mean, it depends on kind of what each segment of the company really has its own tools that it utilizes. So we like to to let people use what they feel the most comfortable with. And so each team kind of has their own things. So for example, on the design side, we use a tool called Notion, which is kind of like Google Docs. And so we'll do a lot of product specs in there and a lot of design brainstorming. And then on the engineering side, we use GitHub a lot to, and this is just to manage generally like issues and code and everything. But, you know, there's quite a more in-depth code stack that I won't go into. But, and then we, you know, on the other sides of our business, like support or operations, we're using some tools. Like we use a support tool called Helpy that lets us, it's one of the only support tools that lets you self-host. And so we really wanted to make sure that on the support side, we were self-hosting our system so that people, we could protect our customers' privacy, basically.
Sure.
So, you know, people are writing into us about asking questions about managing their keys or making sure their node is running correctly, that kind of stuff. We want to make sure we can absolutely lock that down and keep it private rather than having all of this customer data in the Zendesk cloud or something like that.
Right. exactly.
So yeah, that's kind of at a super high level, the tool set that each of the various segments use. And then we've also, I mean, we use, it's called Riot and it's a encrypted version of Slack basically. And so we really would have loved to use Slack because it's so easy to use, but, Slack does not have end-to-end encryption. And we said, all right, if we're going to be communicating within our company in a chat program, we want it to be end-to-end encrypted. It's just, it's all goes back to like baking in the privacy and the security into everything we do. So we use Riot a lot to talk between us, that kind of stuff.
Is Casa a mostly like distributed company, a remote company, or do you guys like have a central place where most of the employees are?
No, we're actually fully remote. Everybody works from home. We have a couple of cities where there's a few more people. So sometimes those people will get together and co-work for a while, but in general, we're fully remote. And that's something that we think is an important part of our culture because one, it allows us to hire anybody no matter where they are so we can get the best people. But then it also gives our employees flexibility to mostly like set their own schedule, and it makes it less about working 9 to 5 in the office and showing up, and more about the things that we're accomplishing as a team. So we think it's a nice thing to do, and we've found a way to make it work pretty well, I would say. There's a lot of video chats. But it works pretty well for us, and it's definitely a core part of who we are.
Yeah, I've been working remote for a long time now, and I wouldn't want to go back, I don't think, to doing it another way or doing it the old fashioned way.
Yeah, every once in a while I start to go a little stir crazy, and so I'll just go hit up a coffee shop or something like that to see some people. But otherwise it's pretty nice.
After our second kid was born, I couldn't do the home office anymore. It was just too disruptive at home. Yeah. So I've got a co-working space now, but it still have all the flexibility of remote work and set my own schedule. And it's really just about getting your stuff done, which is the way it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
In my mind. So cool. All right. I'd love to hear, I ask this question sometimes, just to kind of promote some try to spur some utter speculation, just pure speculation. Obviously this is we can't predict the future kind of thing, but and it also kind of gets at the reasons why people are doing this, like why people are into Bitcoin. So what do you think a Bitcoin future looks like in 50 years?
Interesting. Yeah. So I think a Bitcoin future, looks like what actually, I should have come up with this immediately because this is one of our biggest sayings, but it's a node in every home and a key manager in every pocket. And so it's people managing their own private keys and really fully controlling their own money in the form of Bitcoin. And it's a node in every home, meaning that people are supporting the Bitcoin network as one of their core devices that they have in their home. And then that evolves into not just supporting the Bitcoin network, but bringing a lot of the more sensitive data, personal data related things into back into their own home. So we used to have everything stored on PCs in our home, and then the internet came around and everything got moved to the cloud. All of our personal photos, financial information, health information, everything's in the cloud. We think some of that, the most private stuff that people want to make sure that they keep really secure, will actually migrate back to the home. And that will be enabled by decentralized computing based on Bitcoin. And so when that comes back, it's enabled by people owning their own keys and utilizing that to encrypt data. I think encryption will be everywhere, and it will be much easier to use than it is now.
Yeah.
I really think that it's almost like it's a cypherpunk future, but normalized so that people don't feel like they're being nerds doing it. The nerds are always doing the cool stuff first, right? And then eventually it filters back to everybody else in society, and it becomes the normal thing to do. And so I really think it'll be like we are headed towards this cypherpunk future of encryption and owning your own money and truly securing your own personalized data within your home. So that's really what I think will come out of this. And obviously that sounds like a marketing pitch for Casa, but the reason it does is because that's what everybody at Casa believes as well. And so we're like, we're going to build for that future.
It's beautiful, man. I really appreciate it. And like I said, I'm a huge fan of Casa and the work you guys are doing. Really appreciate that you're really just pushing Bitcoin forward and making it more user friendly. And I think the goal of a node in every home and a key manager in every pocket is a noble one. Honestly, I think it's one that will make for a better future for our children and our children's children. And you know, we talk a lot about on this show about the kind of social and economic outcomes of a Bitcoin future. And a lot of that, like if that is to come, we need to make it usable and able to be adopted by the masses. And that's what you guys are working on. So I think it's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, cool. Man.
Well, thank you very much, Brady. It's been a blast.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for coming on. All right. It was a great time sitting down and chatting with Nick about Casa and Bitcoin. So what did you all think about the conversation? What questions or thoughts did we surface today while you were listening? Let us know on Bitcoin Twitter. We're there to continue the conversation. Nick is at N Newman. That's at N-N-E-U-M-A-N. And I am at Citizen Bitcoin, of course. If you appreciate the podcast, you can give back and help me out by sharing the episode on Bitcoin Twitter. That really helps a lot. Recommending the pod to friends and family who are asking you about Bitcoin. Send them my way. I will help lead them to the right, you know, educational material and the right kind of way to think about what's going on here. Leave a rating review on Apple Podcasts. You can star and subscribe in your podcast apps. Also, visit layer1btc.com and you can grab yourself some Citizen Bitcoin merch. Nick Ward has some awesome designs there. You know, dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of designs to choose from. So it's definitely worth checking out. Get some swag. It's some nice memorabilia to have from these kind of early days of Bitcoin. It'll be fun to have around later on in your life. So that's it for this one. Take care out there, Bitcoiners, wherever you happen to be in the world.